morning, good people. John Schrader here. First podcast at night. I thought I'd try something today in a different light. Today, I'd like to talk to you about this idea of why I have said time and time again, I think everyone in this country at some time in their life needs to start and own their own business for a whole lot of different reasons. But you also hear me say that if you start your own business, there is a 65% chance that you will, within the first 5 to 7 years, your business will fail. And I'm getting more and more comments, John, why in the world would we want to start our own business if you're telling us that the national average is failure within 5 to 6 years? Could be because maybe you haven't had the right formula yet to go out, start your own business. And much of what we're trying to do here is give you the formula that I have seen work for not just myself, but for so many successful businessmen. When I ask them the questions of why was your business successful, or I could see from afar why their business was successful, I often realize that those who were confident, those who were patient, and those who were respectful to the people around them, time and time again, seem to have businesses that lasted more than 5 years or 7 years, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years. So maybe my confidence in you someday owning your own business deals with a simple formula, CPR, and that's where we're going to continue to push you to someday do your own deal, to someday have the dream of being your own boss. Again, it doesn't matter if it's a simple little, oh gosh, let's go there, a simple little mermaid outlet, or shoot, maybe you'll be an Elon Musk kind of guy that knows technology and can go big places. But if we're going to have a business that's going to be successful, I got to share a story with you that happened one day, had to do with aquatics, and was a very good example, in my opinion, of why, if you're going to be in business, you've got to understand the importance of profit. So we're going to call this a $500,000 waterfall, okay? $500,000 waterfall. It sounds exciting, right? Yeah, it was until we talked further. So as you know, my company began to expand in a variety of landscaping ideas. And one of my greatest passions, of the top two of all of my landscaping passions, was aquatics. Water gardens, waterfalls, bubblers, selling of koi, selling of all types of aquatic equipment. For me, having the ability to move water, whether it was 50 gallons out of a bubbler or 5,000 gallons out of a koi pond, or hundreds of thousands of gallons out of a lake onto a waterfall that then could be transferred into an amazing water slide into the lake. Water gardening was just something that hit me at the right time of my life that made me feel like a kid again, where I could just play with water while I was making money. A lot of components with water features that required a lot of research. A lot of components that if you didn't do it right, you're going to be getting a call in 6 months to a year because suddenly the waterfall you had created was starting to leak. And if it started to leak and your customers pond became empty and the koi, which they spent lots of money on, were flopping around or dead, well, you know, like everything else, it created some drama. With my company also in irrigation and a variety of other things, I remember one day I'm coming home from Indianapolis, driving down through southern Indiana. And as I'm driving home, I look up, and next to the road I'm driving on is a massive waterfall being constructed. Imagine there's 8 or 10, maybe 12 people on this hill, lots of equipment, EDPM rubber everywhere, probably hundreds of tons of stone. And it didn't take long for me at all to realize that somebody, this company, was putting together an amazing water feature. Waterfalls coming down 3 or 4 different areas. The pumps I saw were going to create a waterfall that was probably pushing anywhere from 50 to 100,000 gallons an hour. I was intrigued. When you understand me, as you're starting to, I think, when I'm intrigued with something, I want to learn more. This waterfall that they were building on the side of this very large hill was larger than most people were doing at this time. It was requiring enough labor and enough materials where I had to ask the question, because I like asking the question. So I pulled over to the side of the road and I walked through the construction area, kind of pretending like I actually either worked there or I kind of knew what I was doing. And I could tell fairly immediately that this wasn't a really super happy group of people. They were working hard. They were creating what in southern Indiana was a very rare waterfall. But I just sensed something didn't quite feel right. So I finally found the people I needed to talk to who could say, hey, where is your manager? Who's in charge of this job? And they eventually pointed to the guy on top of the hill. And as I'm walking up this very large hill, seeing massive amounts of stone being placed, I introduced myself, told him that I had been in aquatics for a number of years, and I was absolutely amazed at how awesome this job looked. I couldn't wait someday to come back and see this huge waterfall going down 3 or 4 different we'll call them tributaries, okay? And just noticing that they were using the right equipment, they were using the materials that dealt with biological and mechanical filtration, which we'll get into another day. So talking with the gentleman, I could tell he wasn't really much in the mood of wanting to discuss the project. I understand, you know, you've got a lot going on. This project was probably going to take weeks and months to complete. He told me a little bit about how it all came about and what they were planning on doing. And then I asked the question. So just curious, do you mind telling me what you're charging for this water feature? And he looked at me, kind of like, it's kind of ballsy that you ask me this question, but since you've asked, I will answer in the way I need to. We're charging about $500,000 for this humongous water feature. Okay, I said, that's impressive. But what more can you say? Well, honestly, we should have charged about $1 million. Yeah, there's just a whole lot of things we didn't consider. There's some areas here that we didn't expect to be the problems that we expected when we did the excavation. So yeah, we would have made some decent money had we charged $1 million, but we didn't. That kind of explained, in my opinion, why maybe the demeanor of the construction site was where it was at. $500,000 sounds like a lot of money for a waterfall with a bunch of rocks and EDPM liner and humongous pumps coming out of biological mechanical filtration. But if you are going to be in business and you want to be successful, and you want this business to go on for years and years, you understand why this half hour moment for me was something that would stick with me for 10, 20, almost 30 years. Are you profitable on your jobs? I can build an amazing water feature that tens of thousands of people will pass every week. And every one of those people passing will look up at that waterfall and say, oh my gosh, look how beautiful that is. Look at the water cascading down. How many linear feet do you think that is? And how many gallons per hour are those pumps pushing? And yeah, most people will just say, wow, that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool until you realize that if your company is off by $500,000 on what you should have charged, yeah, you may not be able to stay in business and follow your dream the way you want to. I find so often with startup companies or companies that have found their passion, that so often they are so excited about getting the job. They're so excited about, hey, we were the low bid on the job, so we got the job. But if I'm off by $500,000, does that dream job become the nightmare job? Does that moment of, oh my gosh, guys, we got it, we're excited, turn into, why in the world did we bid so? Was it inexperience? Could be. Were there unknowns on this hill that they couldn't quite understand until they started excavating it? Possibly. But jobs like these happen every day. There could be a similar job where you're a brand new company and you bid $5,000 for the job, and into the job, you realize you should have bid $10,000. I'm sure there are companies out there that bid $200 million for the job, and years later, they realized it should have been $400 million. See where I'm going here? If you want to be successful in whatever your business is, you can't have these kind of jobs too often. You can't go out and 30, 40, 50% of the time you misbid or you charge so inexpensively that everybody loves you except for the banker. A half $500,000 job sounds like a lot of money to a lot of people who maybe aren't putting out jobs that would never reach that amount, right? But it's just a ratio, it's just a number. My point is this: patience, respect, confidence. Somewhere along the line, they lacked one of those. I could tell by the equipment, I could tell by the people that they had respect for what they were doing. I could tell by the people that most likely were patient. But did they do the research? Did they research this job? Had they done many of these jobs before? Was the research that they did on what it was going to take to build this waterfall based on the design, whether they did it or an engineering company did it? Did they do the research to put themselves in the position to not be off by maybe $500,000? Whatever you decide to get into, I am going to suggest to you that when you bid, when you sell, when you create, when you go after your dream, I want you to make sure your profit margins are high. I want you to be the kind of person that says, if I can't make X number of dollars as my net profit, then I'm going to walk away from the job. I don't need something that's going to cost me and my company so much time, effort, and money that when it's all said and done, we lost some money here. It doesn't always happen that way. I'm going to tell you, try to be the business out there that says, if I can't make any money, I don't need this. If I can't make a decent profit, I can walk away from this. Because the biggest mistake I find in many startup businesses is they are so desperate and want to do every job they can get their hands on that they lose sight on, am I being profitable? And 65% of businesses will fail. And 9 times out of 10, because they're not being profitable. All right? So, whatever you're going to get into, whatever you're doing, please don't be afraid to say, I'm going to be profitable in this job or I'm going to walk away. If I need to raise my prices because I want my profit margins to be X, then I'm going to do that. Yeah, you can take a little bit of time as you introduce yourself to society, the city, wherever you're at. Yeah, you might need a little bit of time to get your name out there, and some of the jobs might need to be showing your quality versus showing your ability to create a profit. But those have got to be extremely rare. All right? So, the $500,000 waterfall sounds really cool until you realize it should have been a $1 million waterfall. And, you know, I can honestly say I never did get back to see exactly where that big waterfall was because, I don't know, life happened, distractions occurred. Maybe I'll get back there. All right. So, all this ice, all this snow, all this winter fun wants me to share a couple stories that maybe will give you a laugh. I don't know. I am one that when the lake freezes over, I think of my fish. So I've been spending a little time with a chainsaw on the lake, cutting out some sections of the ice so I can feed the catfish. And I've been amazed that on my lake, for whatever reason, there are areas of my lake that are 4 inches thick, and there's areas of my lake that are 1/2 inch thick. And it's been really ironic to figure out, okay, why are some parts of my lake thick enough that, you know, me and some of my friends can go ice fishing, and there's other parts of my lake that at my weight, I can't really go on. So today, I had the opportunity to go back in time. And there is a particular lake, I think you've heard me talk about it. It's called Silver's Lake, Southern Indiana, Helfrich Golf Course. And a lake that we spent a lot of time as young kids playing on. A lake that had so many amazing memories because it's where we learned to ice skate. It's where we learned to play hockey. And there's an amazing thing about this lake that I just learned today. After all these years, there's a part of this lake is on the south side that this lake would freeze so quickly, so thick, so hard, that we could literally go out a couple days after the weather was cold enough, and we could already start skating, playing hockey. I talked to the wife of my, unfortunately, deceased cousin, who shared with me something today that I'd never heard of before. Why this lake froze so much quicker and so much thicker than most any lake in Evansville. And again, I can't 100% confirm exactly what she said, but it went something like this. Above the lake currently, there is a 911 station, okay? Before 911 station took over, there was a building there that she said was part of the Sterling Brewery Company, where Sterling Brewery was one of the beer-making companies in Evansville that a lot of happy people worked at. You'll have to ask them why. But anyway, she tells me that the reason this part of this lake froze so quickly and so hard was because of certain chemicals that were put into this lake years ago. They would actually use this lake to, back in the early days, cut the ice, store the ice, and then eventually sell the ice, or use this ice to keep their beverages cold until they were distributed. So Silver's Lake, built here right off of West Side Harmony Way, was a lake that literally we could skate on when every other lake in Evansville was still a little dangerous. I was intrigued after I cut up my lake a little bit and my ice was about 3.5 inches thick. I decided to take the chainsaw over to the lake. I didn't tell anybody, of course. What would that lake that I remembered always freezing over so quickly, what would the depth of the ice, the thickness of the ice be? And sure enough, after cutting a couple small sections, because no one was playing on the golf course because of the 5 inches of snow, sure enough, where I was cutting the ice, it was nearly 5.5 to 6 inches thick, almost twice the thickness of areas on my lake. But what makes this lake so fun? Better yet, what makes this lake so funny? Years ago, 1983, 84, 85, 86, somewhere around that time, we spent a lot of time in the winter going to the lake, skating on the lake, hitting pucks on the lake. And there was one particular day that I'll never forget. A particular day that a very good friend of mine, Mr. Lutz, Jerry Lutz, we all go out on this day because it was one of the coldest, most miserable days in Evansville for maybe 40 or 50 years. If I recall, the temperature was about 10 to 20 below zero with a wind chill factor of, oh my gosh, pretty darn cold. As my fraternity brothers and I were out of school, obviously, and things were a little boring, the city nearly shut down to the point where no one was going outside because the frigid temperatures made it so miserable in some cases, almost dangerous. But you know how you are when you're 20, 21, 22. You are invincible. And every adventure is just right around the corner. So, boys, hey, out of school, out of ideas, we're bored inside. Let's go to the lake and do some skating. We've got some hockey sticks. We've got some pucks. And yes, because we were legal, we had a couple cases of beverages that we were going to partake in. And sure enough, here we were on one of the coldest days in the history of Evansville. We were out on the lake having fun. But we also built a big fire. We weren't planning on staying like all day, but for the next 2 or 3 hours, we had nothing better to do. And it just so happened that while we were all playing out on the lake, enjoying our moment of frivolity, we suddenly see a van pull up. A van from the local news agency. We were all out on the lake, but we had our good friend Jerry was tending the fire. It was a nice fire, big enough that it would keep people warm, and not so big that we would require a fire engine or fire department to come to put it out. I remember watching the van doors open, and sure enough, a lady with a really cool warm hat and a very, very thick coat comes out with her microphone, and the other gentleman who had the video camera walks down to Jerry and begins the interview. We all kind of stop at that time because, let's be honest, you know, we weren't the greatest hockey players in the world, but hey, maybe they came to take pictures of us playing hockey, and, you know, for a couple of the guys, maybe that could be their chance to make it big somewhere. But no, they were more interested in why in the world are you guys, one of the few in the entire city of Evansville, out playing in some of the coldest, most miserable, most bizarre temperatures our city had ever seen. Well, we were young, adventurous, excited that, hey, this is a good place to be. I noticed at the time that the cameraman then began to pan across the lake where we were. He then began to get video of the fire. I'm pretty sure he probably saw and maybe videoed the couple of cases of adult beverages that were there also. And then the question, the perfect question. And to me, one of the greatest answers of all time. So she says to Jerry, "So, sir, you guys are out at USI and you're students, and what are you studying and this and that?" And then she finally said, "So it's good to see you have a fire here that will keep you guys warm, right? The fire was built to keep you warm, correct?" And my great friend Jerry said, "No, ma'am, actually, we built the fire to keep our beer from freezing because we really didn't want our beer to freeze where we would then have to leave too early." She took a moment, processed what he said, and sure enough, about 4 hours later that night on channel 14 or 25, I believe it was Channel 14, they do the story. And they are brave enough and happy enough and excited enough for my friend Jerry to be on the news to say that, yes, a real fire, the purpose of a great fire is not always to keep everyone warm, but it is to keep the beer from freezing. Mr. Lutz, I'm sure you remember that day, and we were all back at the fraternity house that night as we all watched, and, you know, they didn't care much about the puck or the guys skating, but by God, they did care about the fire. So, would you ever feel like you could be in a place And would you ever have the wit, the creative thinking, to be able to tell the newscaster what was probably one of the best answers many of them had ever heard? So that being said, just a few other thoughts today that I want to push your way. Number one, let me give a moment's thought in prayers and respect to the people of California. As you know, they have been suffering and struggling with one of the most devastating fires this country has probably ever seen. My hat's off to all of the first responders, all of the firemen, all of the volunteers who are spending countless number of hours out there helping their neighbors, helping their people. Don't know where it's going to end. Don't know what's going to come of it. But right now, I just want to take a moment to keep those people in our thoughts and prayers and truly thank all of those who are spending all that time and putting their lives on the line to put those devastating fires out. Another thing I want to just kind of mention, I was able to watch the funeral of Jimmy Carter, 100-year-old amazing man that, in my opinion, you can decide where he was as a president, good, bad, or indifferent. But I can honestly tell you, I think Jimmy Carter, not just the president, but the man, was so incredibly amazing that he could reach out to everyone, and he did. He was a politician, which will mean as a politician, he will be loved by some and he will be denigrated by others, because that's what politics is all about. But to me, Jimmy Carter was a person that his entire life, he showed us just how much he cared for his fellow man. When he finally retired from being a president, I guess we can call that retirement, he just didn't go out and write a bunch of books and hang out with some friends. And no, Jimmy Carter was the kind of guy that spent many, many, many days of the rest of his life helping those people, building those houses, Habitat for Humanity. I mean, here was a guy that he didn't need to do anything but just relax in the sun and you know, dream about being one of the 46, 47 presidents of our country. Now, Jimmy Carter was an amazing man that realized that his value to mankind, his value to this country, didn't stop at the Oval Office. It continued way after. And to be able to live to 100 was just absolutely amazing. As I watched the funeral, I'm thinking, okay, finally somebody could bring the red and the blue together. Somebody had the ability to bring our political moment to a spiritual moment, to a God moment. And if you watched it and you saw how Democrats and Republicans were able to talk and share moments, and you didn't get caught up in which politician was talking to which politician, and you spent more time on, hey, here were all the presidents and the first ladies talking, sharing, and honoring with great respect who I think was a gentleman that was as diverse in his entire life than just about any president we had. A president that he worked hard for his country before politics, during politics, but most importantly, after he got out of the White House, he spent decades helping our fellow man. So I just wanted to kind of recognize him. So I don't know if I've sent the video out about our gaggle of turkeys. I know it's gaggle of geese, but a bunch of turkeys have been hanging out by the house, scaring the crap out of the birds that are eating all the bird seed. But once again, I love the turkeys who are hanging around the house. That makes me realize that they're part of God's plan. So loving God, loving this country, and still realizing that we as a country, we have a long way to go. But for some reason, I feel like maybe, just maybe, we're going to start working together. Maybe we can once again realize we are always going to have differences of opinion. We're always going to see this world differently, but maybe we can start to realize that we don't have to condemn each other because we have a difference of opinion. We can literally take our differences of opinion, work with some compromise, and maybe a whole lot of this country can start to move in a better direction. I love my family because, you know, somebody's got to take care of me someday, right? Somebody's got to make sure that I'm getting enough to eat, getting enough to drink, that if I do fall through the ice on the lake, that someone will throw me a rope. And once again, loving people is just so much fun. Today, I want to love a guy by the name of, Jimmy Carter, and to live 100 years and still be productive and active, to still have a sense about him that people can look and say, wow, he cared about this country. So that being said, enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for tuning in. And go out there, have an empowering day. And if you get a chance, go out and help a fellow man. I promise you, it will make you sleep better at night. Enjoy.